this morning on the Wake Up Call with KB and Andy.
Well, it's a pretty good start to this week. Weather outstanding, a life-changing night for the Indiana Fever and the Pacers. Back in the playoffs, seven-game series. Vital for the franchise to take a step in that direction, and they do it with really an emphatic win yesterday. Played with fire and losing to Cleveland on Friday night. That eliminated them from possibly getting home court in round one. They will be in Milwaukee coming up on Sunday. Still have to wait for times and exact dates for the rest of that series, but again, things will get underway on Sunday. We'll see about the availability of Giannis Antetokounmpo and that calf strain. I guess if you want to say, oh, the NBA favors stars, they did give Milwaukee an extra day, right? Saturday could have been the start of this series. Half the series on Saturday, half will start on Sunday. So that will be Pacers-Bucks. I thought Rick Carlisle, kind of interesting post-game yesterday, Andy.
Yeah, you know, it's crazy. So, you know, yesterday the game's over or whatever. And KB, I think you mentioned this, Mark, as well. You guys went out and you're mowing the lawn and make that 3 for 3. You know, you know, I spent some time outside, family's outside doing some stuff around the house, obviously. And, you know, later on that night, about 6, 7 o'clock or so, I dial up the Rick Carlisle press conference. And, you know, I mentioned this to you off the air a couple different times, but I never know which way Coach Carlisle is going to zig or zag. Does that make sense? Like, sometimes he has come on, you know, our air. He's been on with us. He'll be on tomorrow at 8 o'clock. He's either been on with us or at some of these press conferences where, you know, I thought he would be kind of angry at his team, right? And he doesn't show that anger. He plays good cop. And then there are other times, God knows we've had those on our air to where we've had him on and he's been harsher. He's been more bad cop than good cop. And I've always found that interesting because I never know after a game exactly what he's, you know, is he uplifting his team? Is he clubbing his team over the head a little bit? That's kind of, you know, always a little bit of a guess on what he's going to do. And so, you know, we've had Carlisle on all year. And I remember a couple weeks, KB said to us, he goes, you know, we don't want to be the 7 or 8 seed. We want to be, you know, the 4 seed, the 5 seed. You know, we want to be in those 7-game series. We think we've worked hard enough to earn it and everything else. And so yesterday, you get the, you know, you were there. You get the standing ovation at the end of the game, right? You get Miles Turner before the game. They come out. They drop 49 points in the first quarter.
I mean,
they
franchise
were
record.
In. Again, you're dialed in. It's looking good. You end up winning by a bunch where, you know, essentially the last 9-10 minutes of the game, well, it might have even been the entire fourth quarter. We're talking third stringers, guys who normally wouldn't even sniff any playing time. And so, you know, there was a lot of jubilation, and you're the 6th seed, and then a couple, you know, literally during the press conference, so Carlisle got done, and when they brought the players out, by the time like Siakam got up there, you knew that it was going to be Pacers and Bucks, not when Carlisle was speaking. So we'll get really the first time him talking about Milwaukee tomorrow. But I found it interesting, you know, Carlisle and all this jubilation, I thought he was kind of reality check, if you will. I thought he was almost bad cop. And no, we expected this, and now we want to go on and win. So I want to play two clips here. And I want you to take a listen, and then we can react to this because I just found his stance and the way he was going to play his team getting back into the postseason a couple years ago, just 25 wins. You see where they are now. How was Carlisle going to play this? And he played this almost as bad cop, which I found interesting. Here's Carlisle making it to the playoffs. Not enough. They want more.
We're happy to be in, but our work's just begun. You know, that's the way we're going to look at this. And so just getting to the playoffs is not the goal. The goal is a championship. And so, you know, getting to the playoffs is certainly one step toward the goal. But we've got to think big. We've got to have big aspirations, and we've got to have high standards. And so that's what we're going to take into this.
I found that to be interesting. And then if you're a Pacer fan today listening to this, you got to love this clip. Carlisle, hey, no small market BS. We want to go and we want to go out there and win.
This organization has been in the conference finals 8 times, in the NBA finals 1 time, and they've won 3 championships in the ABA. This is not an organization that's just happy to be in the playoffs. Okay? And if it is, I mean, those people should be thinking of it a different way. That's not what this is about. This is not, you know, small market, you know, lowered expectations. We can't have that. We can't have it.
And I just found that interesting. Between that, his unhappiness with the way they play defense in the first half. I mean, he said multiple times, if we go out in the playoffs and we play this type of defense, it's going to be a quick series against anybody. I just thought it was, while everyone around there is celebrating, I thought Carlisle said, I need to reality check everybody that we made the postseason. Let's not embarrass ourselves. Let's go win. And listen, I think they have a great chance against Milwaukee. Why would I not think they don't have a great chance against Milwaukee?
You know, I kind of agree with where Rick Carlisle was going yesterday. Not totally, if I'm going to be fully honest. I think you can celebrate along the way. You know, it's kind of a bit like Purdue winning in the Elite Eight over Tennessee. You should celebrate that. You haven't been in the Final Four since 1980. At the same time, refocus, get ready for the Final Four, and handle your business. And obviously the national title didn't go well, but they handled their business against NC State. And that's how I feel about the Pacers. I know Rick brings up a lot of the historical data with the Pacers. The issue is, it's historical data. Andy, in the here and now, in the present, we haven't talked about the Pacers in the playoffs. They just ended one of their, I would argue, their biggest playoff drought in nearly 40 years by making the postseason. I mean, we are not used to this franchise getting to mid-April and it being over. But that's been the norm lately. 4 years without the playoffs. 6 years without a playoff win. 10 years without a playoff series win. And obviously the playoff win and the playoff series win, those are boxes still to be checked. But assuming they win at least one playoff game coming up here in this series, they will check that box. So I sit here and think in the immediate, like, 24-hour reaction to yesterday, I get Rick Carlisle's the head coach of the team and has to play a little bit of bad cop. But I'm totally fine with players celebrating it, fans celebrating it.
He played
it.
All the bad cop yesterday, my man.
And, like, just people feeling good about this team. They should. 25 to 35 to 47 wins, they should be happy about their basketball team in the postseason because that hasn't been there in recent years. And again, Rick, maybe he's thinking back to his days as head coach. Maybe he's, obviously he brings up the ABA. I mean, yes, I understand those banners, but if you want to bring that up, the banners are kind of dusty. So it's time to get back there, and in order to get to a championship, you got to qualify for the damn tournament in the first place. So you got to crawl, and the Pacers are crawling, and now they're going to try to walk, and we'll see how all of that plays out on Sunday. But in the first 24 hours after the season ends, you got 6 days to refocus.
Well, I was about to say, now we have a week. What are we going to do for the next week?
And luckily, this series has got endless storylines everywhere you look with Pacers and Bucks, but part of me is like, I like Rick's mindset because, yeah, you do want to shoot higher and you do want to reach for the stars, if you will. And, yeah, I think it's a franchise that, you know, whether it's Denver, whether it's Milwaukee, I mean, smaller market teams have proven they can have success in the postseason here recently. But at the same time, I will clap and I will say good work, Pacers, because they should celebrate making the playoffs because, again, That is not something we've talked about with this team now for several seasons.
No, I want to be clear. I know I've said this. Them being a top six seed absolutely matters in the storylines of this season. If they would have dropped and they lose yesterday, let's say they lose yesterday and they would have dropped down to the playoff, KB, that would have been, I mean, we would have come in here angry, right? I mean, you would have been angry at this team and you would have been in the building, but you don't want to be angry, might not be the right word, but you would have been really frustrated with this team that the objective was to get to the top six and they didn't, but ultimately they did. And a couple other things, you know, yesterday I'm watching that game and it ends and, you know, there's the standing ovation. You see the happiness in the players' faces and everything else because they understood on Friday they spit the bit, if you will, and they had a couple days that they got to sit and really think about it. And I don't know, just, you know, with Haliburton and the young players that they have, you bring back Siakam, obviously, and I don't know. I mean, you have a guy like Jairus Walker over there that at some point is going to emerge, and right now they're doing all this without Benedict Mathurin. There is a sense of they made the playoffs, but there is also attached to it that sense of hope that this is not as good as we are. We are going to be better than this other years. And then it comes out, and listen, it comes out that you're playing Milwaukee, and I absolutely love it. I mean, this is who you want to play. Personally, I understand the storylines. I didn't want to play the Knicks. I didn't. With OG Anunoby, they're a better team. Jalen Brunson right now is playing like an absolute MVP candidate. Plus, if you told me a team that might be able to kind of slow you down and grind you out, that might be the Knicks. So now I don't have to worry about the Knicks. We get to worry about the Milwaukee Bucks and the crybaby franchise that the Bucks are. And I don't know if Giannis is, listen, I don't want anyone to be injured, but he is compromised, or you would imagine is going to be compromised in this series. Whether he is out games or he is limited in games, you would imagine he's not going to be 43 points and 13 rebounds like you mentioned he's averaged against Indiana over five games. But with the game ball and chasing the Pacers in the locker room and all the BS that he started and that he did, boy, if the Pacers can win a seven-game series against mighty Milwaukee and the big transaction of getting Dame Lillard in the offseason, that is going to be a gut punch to that franchise. And that's what I hope happens. I love that they're facing Milwaukee. Yeah, I love it.
It's such a golden opportunity. I mean, again, to catch the break with Giannis, I mean, that's you couldn't ask for anything more. We'll see exactly where he's at availability and percentage-wise if he plays. And how early he plays in the series. And it's one of these weird things where you're going to walk into game one and game two, and you can't have the mindset of, we'll be fortunate to steal one. Like, you have to steal one, because theoretically, that's when Giannis will be his most limited.
Sure, good point.
If he plays. I mean, these road games are not going to be, boy, I hope we can get, you know, 1-1 back here for game three. No. You need to get one of those two, assuming that Giannis will reach whatever, closer to 100% by game three or game four. It is just wild to think, and I know, again, we'll do this exercise all week long, Siakam didn't play in a single meeting. Doc Rivers didn't coach in a single meeting. No Mathurin. No Buddy Hield. They added, I guess, Patrick Beverley. I would assume that is a Tyrese Halliburton.
Sure.
And Halliburton has cooked him, for what it's worth.
It's a size, but it does matter. Needs to be said. He's
in his career, but that is obviously different from these matchups. And then, of course, Giannis, you know, the 42 and 13 averages that he had against you. I mean, obviously, we talk so much about the game ball game. We forget that the dude had, 64 in that game?
Giannis has been ridiculous.
I mean, the Pacers have no answer. And if you put Siakam on him, then you wonder how effective Siakam can be on the other end of the floor, just with foul trouble and just, you know, how much is he, you know, worn down from guarding Giannis on the opposite end. So all of these storylines are just endless. And, you know, to your point, all the pressure is as golden of an opportunity as the Pacers have. Still, 90-some% of the pressure is on Milwaukee, because they lost 4-1 to Miami in round one last year. They made the trade for Damian Lillard. You know, there's the inevitable question of, when you have a star like Giannis, you've got to have this sort of success to appease him.
We got to keep him happy. Yeah.
And that's why probably you said Adrian Griffin, see you later, halfway through the year, and brought, you know, Doc Rivers into coach. And then I think there's a little bit on the Rick Carlisle end of, I hear Carlisle's comments yesterday, and I think to myself, okay, probably a good amount of that stems from the Pacers' defense yesterday. And, you know, he was clearly frustrated in the first half of, like, you know, it was a tie game with, like, 3 minutes to go in the first half. The Pacers are on their way to set a franchise record in points for a half, and it's still tied. So I think some of it stems from that. But also, Rick Carlisle hasn't won a playoff series in a decade.
Yeah.
I mean, as much as people poke fun at Doc Rivers has won several playoff series in that time frame.
Right.
So, you know, does Rick feel any of that? And, you know, that's a question I asked him at the start of the season. And, you know, I don't think it's something he definitely, like, wants to go down that path. But, you know, part of that, I think, in the second act, if you will, for him, or however you want to define it, I think falls a little bit on his shoulders. And how would you not think about that? There is just so much to get into with this series, and we'll obviously do it all week long.
Yeah, we have all week. Again, I don't know why I'm so, I don't know if the word's bullish. I just like this matchup in the drama. And I guess I respect the Knicks and or Tom Thibodeau in a seven-game series more so than I'm respecting the Bucks, they've had success against them. I'm not in love with Doc Rivers there. They aren't playing their basketball. Their star is going to be compromised. Dame Lillard hasn't done the Pacers dirty yet, you know, too much this season. So those are the things that I was thinking. Quickly, let me give you something, Andrew Luck. I stole this from Kevin Bowen's Twitter account.
No, okay? Thank you.
We ripped this.
Thank you for the credit.
You were there on, what was it? Was it Friday night?
Friday night. Yep.
Over $1 million raised again. So a great job there with Chuck Pagano and company getting it done, fighting cancer. Absolutely fantastic. Andrew Luck was asked. Mark, let's go to clip 10, actually. I told you 11. Let's go to clip 10. Did you ask him this or did Chap ask him this about playing football again? I couldn't tell.
I think it was Chap.
Was it Chap?
Yeah. He didn't really entertain my question too much. Well, no, well. One of the two.
So Andrew,
he liked the second one. Not
here's
the first one.
Andrew Luck playing football again. Did it ever come back? Did it ever pop up in his mind?
I retired. That part of it was put to bed in my mind in a very simple sort of direct. There was a lot of complications around it. You know, it certainly tormented inside, you know, and as you guys saw, you know, that night. But I think that part of it has stayed.
It seemed like that's what the case was when you were talking that night, is you were done with football. There were reasons for it, but you were sort of done with football because of all that.
Yeah, absolutely. That's the case. And again, I think to go back to Zach's previous question, I certainly realized I still love this game, and I want to have it integrated in my life. It's just, it's got to be different. You know,
guys played to their 40.
I played with guys who played to their 40. I have a lot more respect for Matt Hasselbeck. Not that I didn't respect Mac before.
Yeah, I mean, I guess you have to rehash a little bit of that infamous night when you're talking about this. He couldn't compartmentalize the rehab of going through the injuries and not have that impact his other relationships. Like that, if you want to sum up the Andrew Luck retirement in a small snippet, that's it. It made him, I would say, in his words, a poor partner to Nicole, a poor friend, a poor son, however you want to describe it. I think that's what Andrew Luck would point to, of the constant rehab and the physical toll on his body. It was really difficult for him to separate that and leave it at the facility, really. And, you know, again, this is the first time that Luck has spoken to the media since that night, you know, I guess approaching 5 years ago here in August. You know, he didn't want to sniff talking about any of those, you know, memories of the end or anything like that. But at the same time, I don't think he will get too far away from football at all. We know he's helping out a little bit in the high school ranks, and I think he will do something in that sort of capacity when he does, you know, start that next true chapter of what his life's going to be. Right now, it's stay-at-home dad. Yeah, we mentioned this early in the show.
I'm interested in what he does, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, his wife is, you know, heavily involved with the NBC and the production of their gymnastics coverage here of the upcoming Olympics, so she's extremely busy right now, so he's doing a lot of stay-at-home dad stuff with his two girls, and honestly, some sort of history teacher and coaching football is very much what I could see from Andrew Luck, as elementary as that might sound to a dude that has a degree from Stanford.
I know. Isn't that the thing? You're going to grow up and teach high school, and you're going to be the football coach. And that's
he literally,
what Andrew, like, literally might become.
He told the story on Friday of, you know, in coaching football, he realized he knows nothing about blocking and tackling. So he said when he got to Indy this weekend, he called up Jack Doyle and wanted Jack to come over to his house and teach him some of the fundamental aspects of
that. Of course he called Jack Doyle. Who else would he call?
Mr. Fundamental.
Yeah, of course. And then Who else would he call?
An appearance of T.Y. Hilton looked like over the weekend.
I saw that. That's good. It's good to see him back. Listen, I think, you know, as we go this week, I think it's a bigger topic of, you know, fans there are some fans that aren't going to give it up, right? They may never give it up. There's some that have given it up that maybe didn't for a number of years. And then there are some that may give it up here in short order because the Colts have Anthony Richardson and the Colts have some hope on the football side, where some of the years since Luck has been gone, they didn't have hope. Some they did, and some they didn't. So
month of May, that's the thing he misses the most about Indy. Says he still
of
has
course.
His Indy 500 tickets, will not be attending this year's race, but so there's nothing like it. So those over at IMS had to love that answer from Andrew
Luck. They did.
Luck.
We should clip it for them. I would love to do, you know, a keg stand with Andrew Luck or something.
Well,
you know, that'd be something funny. But
don't think he's in
I doubt he would do that.
The Pat McAfee infield section of the race.
Just how dominant was Scottie Scheffler yesterday at the Masters? Our expert, Will Haskett, he joins us next. 93.5, 107.5, The Fan.
His stardom confirmed.
Before we get back into the Masters, Will Haskett going to join us here in a few. We tease this in the 7 o'clock hour. DeForest Buckner penned a paper on a contract extension with the Colts. It was going to happen with the players back in the building. Today, Adam Schefter reporting 2 years, $46 million on that extension. Buckner just turned 30. He was heading into a contract year this coming season. You oftentimes see this with the Colts of guys that they feel like have earned it. They will not have them necessarily play out a contract year. So DeForest Buckner joining several Colts this offseason with multi-year extensions, re-signings. Obviously, Zaire Franklin, Grover Stewart right next to him, Kenny Moore, Michael Pittman Jr., several Colts that have now signed that. So we'll get more into that as the show moves along. But DeForest Buckner with the team through at least the 2025 season.
Yeah, you mentioned it, not a surprising move, I would say. And of course, him being now 30 years old, you wouldn't sign him to a 4 or 5 year deal anyway, but he fits that mold of short-term contract, does he not? We've talked about the 3 year deals and the 2 year deals, and obviously Julian Blackman has just the 1 year deal, but everything else that Ballard has done has been basically 2-3 years. And of course, that lines up with the next few years on building around Anthony Richardson and building around Anthony Richardson while you're not paying Anthony Richardson very much money. And we know in 3 years, if all goes well, you'll be paying him a lot of money. So I don't know if it kind of pops up with this, but, you know, 2 years onto it kind of fits the timeline, KB, of what the Colts have done this offseason.
Yeah, and again, you look at those extensions, the five major ones, you know, you still even had a Tyquan Lewis or a Rigoberto Sanchez if you want to go a little bit deeper. But yeah, that's Buckner, Franklin, Kenny Moore, Michael Pittman Jr., and Grover Stewart. So let's not keep Will Haskett waiting much longer. You heard the highlight right there. Scottie Scheffler wins the Masters second time in 3 years, and Will from PGA Tour Radio joins us now. Will, we did the basketball analogy with you on whatever it was, Wednesday, Thursday when you joined us. Are we overthinking this? Is this UConn? Is this South Carolina? And I would say Scottie Scheffler certainly lived up to that with his performance this week.
Yeah, whatever you want to say, you know, dominant performance, dynasty type performance. He's inevitable, you know, cue all the Thanos, you know, gifts that people will put up there. You know, this is kind of the world that we're in. And I think I mentioned with you guys, it's rarefied air when you can go into any major and you say this guy versus the field. And that was sort of how the Masters felt going into this week. And that guy won, which doesn't happen very often. I mean, CBS yesterday flashed the graphic, I think, a couple of times late in the day about, you know, guys who are number one in the world to win a major. And it's actually a pretty shockingly small list of guys who are actually ranked number one in majors outside of Tiger, who I think did it 11 times, you know, out of his 15 major championships that he won. So, yeah, it's pretty incredible. And, you know, the joke going into the week is the only thing that was going to stop Scottie Scheffler was Meredith Scheffler if she went into labor a couple of weeks early. And now I think the only thing that's going to stop Scottie Scheffler the rest of the year, and he said in his press conference afterwards that, you know, becoming a father in the next couple of weeks isn't going to slow down his desire to keep playing the golf that he's playing. But obviously his schedule is going to feel a little bit different over the next month leading up to the PGA Championship because he's got some things at home to take care of.
Well, I said this earlier to Andy, like it's the ultimate compliment to me when I look, I sat there and when he almost holed out from the fairway on 14, I go, it's time to go mow the lawn. And I am a diehard golf fan. I mean, like, and I sat there and thought he's just made this tournament with six holes ago. Four dudes are tied for the lead and now it's boring. To me, it's just an absolute compliment. And it's so wild for me to even think that I should say this to you, but I will. The guy has had 35 of his, 36 rounds this year, 70 or lower. Do we start talking about the Grand Slam with this guy?
Yeah, yes, because of how he's playing. Now, it's ridiculous to think about that because we've seen this from Scottie before, too. When he made the run to win the Masters 2 years ago, he was on an ultimate heater. He won four times with the fourth win, I think, this week. I think he won all four of those events prior to the rest of the year, and it's just really hard for guys to sustain. There's a real possibility that somebody else is going to sort of rise to meet the level of play that he has right now, whether that's Oberg, who looked super good in his major debut yesterday, going to golf courses that may be even a better fit for him, you know, some guys that I didn't even think were in that great of form. I mean, Colin Morikawa is in the final group yesterday and has not played well at all and still found his way there. So there are guys that you could say are still sort of on the rise. And if Scotty has any sort of regression to the mean, because again, he is playing at a level that is really unsustainable in modern golf outside of a couple of different years of Tiger Woods. So if he can maintain this pace, yes, I guess he's kind of unbeatable, but it's, you know, we've seen it before. It's impossible for these guys to maintain this level of play. So the Grand Slam is certainly something to think about, but I don't want to talk about it until we're halfway there. So we'll reconvene at Valhalla in a couple of weeks. And this is the other thing too about it is, you know, the Masters is an 89-man field, and you just don't have the depth of quality of field like you do at the PGA Championship or even the U.S. Open. And so when we all of a sudden add double, I guess, the strength of the field coming up at the PGA Championship, yeah, that'll be more interesting, because then you'll have more guys that I think are capable of being able to go out there on a golf course that I think allows more people to be able to win.
We're talking Masters, a little golf here on this Monday. Will Haskett joining us here on the Payless Liquors Hotline. Last one on Scheffler, then a couple other items. I'm sure KB's got something on Tiger Woods here before we get you out of here. As it pertains to Scheffler, I mean, he's only 27 years old. We know about, what, 3-4 years ago he came on the scene, and now we see him as being the very top of the sport. Will, how did we get here with this guy? Did you always see it coming, and how over the last few years did we get here to where he is the dominant force in the sport now?
Yeah, I mean, I think within the sport, Andy, there are very few guys at the top of the sport that didn't have the goods from a very early age. He was a dominant junior, an amateur player. I mean, he was qualifying for PGA Tour events very much like Jordan Spieth was as a teenager in Dallas several years ago. Went to Texas. He actually battled a few injuries at Texas, but again, was a phenomenal player, top end of the sport, winning tournaments. You know, just he's been a factor, you know, ever since he put a club in his hand competitively, honestly, in his early teens. And so this is not a surprise. He was the Korn Ferry Tour Rookie of the Year in his first year as a pro to get to the PGA Tour, and then became the PGA Tour Rookie of the Year. So, I mean, he's been at the highest level in sort of the maturation. I think it's a little bit different when, you know, Jordan Spieth goes from turning pro to winning on the PGA Tour a couple of months later and then wins a major 2 years after that. Or John Rahm turns professional, wins in his third or fourth start, you know, on the PGA Tour. And so some of these guys that I think are on the same pedestal as Scottie Scheffler got out and were so successful in their early 20s, whereas Scottie did the 4 years in college, turned professional, took the year on the development tour, on the Korn Ferry Tour, to be able to get to the PGA Tour, which is really the pathway. That's how guys do it these days. And so I guess the timeline was a little bit slower, but this wasn't unexpected. Like, a world-class ball striker, world-class short game. I called a Scottie Scheffler amateur tournament when he was 16 years old and he was a kid from Dallas. So I met Scottie Scheffler a decade ago, and he's always been great at the level that he was, and now he's risen to being the greatest player at the highest level of golf.
$3.6 million for Scottie Scheffler in winning the Masters, and now changing diapers on his horizon here as he becomes a father for the first time here very soon. Will Haskett, PGA Tour Radio, with us on the Payless Liquors Hotline. Will, I kind of shrug my shoulders at Tiger's week in that I guess this is the expectation, maybe, and I don't know if you can even use the word expectation given his physical state, but making the cut, okay. I guess finishing 72 holes, okay. I mean, at times I'm thinking, is he just going to withdraw on Saturday or Sunday? I guess I was kind of impressed by how well he hit the driver, if I'm like going to nitpick the game a little bit. But outside of that, any grand takeaways from what you saw with Tiger?
He obviously moved it off the tee, which is fine. But I'll be honest, KB, I was really disappointed. And I'm not saying that Tiger owes us anything, but when he came back to play competitively at his event in the Bahamas in December, he sort of dangled this carrot that, based off the fact that now with the ankle fused and not having any pain, that he felt like he could progress physically forward to being able to play, and his words were, once a month. And that was a huge carrot to dangle to the golf community to say, oh, wow, like, let's map out this potential schedule for Tiger. Like, how could he play once a month? Obviously, the majors, his tournament at Riviera in February, and we thought, okay, in March we'll see him at the Players' Championship. It's the most important event on the PGA Tour. He's now a board member and is taken on a huge role in that. And he didn't play last month at the Players because his body was not ready after February. And then to see him this week, gutted out again, a golf course where I think him making the cut is not a surprise because of the experience and everything. But then to just sort of see how he just didn't have anything left in the tank on the weekend after having taken, you know, a month and a half off from the last time he played, I think that it showed me that he's not capable of what we had sort of been teased might happen this year, and that is being able to see him more regularly in professional events. So he's obviously in the PGA next month. I expect him to be there at Valhalla. He's not officially in the U.S. Open, even though he said yesterday that he'd like to play the majors the rest of this year. Obviously, the USGA has the option of giving him an exemption. They'd be stupid not to. So I expect to see him at Pinehurst in June. But now it sort of seems like maybe it's five times a year plus the Bahamas in December would be what the hopeful one, because, man, it looked really uncomfortable him playing golf after he made the cut on Friday.
Will Haskett with us here, Payless Liquors Hotline on the Fan on this Monday. Will, I got to ask you this. So Scheffler, I mean, he is the main story, and this is just me. I don't even think Tiger is, you know, I don't know, top five, top 10 in the storylines coming from this weekend. I could be wrong. That's why I'm asking you, what's the second biggest storyline coming from this weekend, whether it be positive or negative? What's the second storyline behind Scottie Scheffler being so great?
Well, if you're watching the broadcast yesterday with Vern Lundquist, but I guess that's probably that's a different conversation. I mean, wow, what a way to go out. I mean, I felt kind of like once Scheffler had, you know, two hands on the trophy, it sort of felt like, all right, let's go through all the pomp and circumstance of making this feel as big as it could possibly be. But all sort of kidding aside with Uncle Vern there, I really honestly feel like your question sort of leads into who do you pick to win the Masters last week? And that is, it's really all about Scottie Scheffler, and then where else do we sort of look into all of this? I mean, Ludvig Åberg is kind of in the same mold of Scottie Scheffler, and these guys have come before him. Former world amateur number one, you know, world beater in college, stayed all 4 years at Texas Tech, so he's a little bit older, and it's amazing that this was actually his first major, that he hadn't just qualified as an amateur for a U.S. Open or a British Open before. A dude has all of the tools, maybe the best driver of the golf ball in the game. And so I think just having him have a couple of interesting moments yesterday, learn, he talked a lot about his nerves afterwards. I would say in golf circles, just sort of the ascension of him being exactly who he thought he would be in major championships is a big part of that storyline. And then Max Homa, who's probably a fan favorite, you know, I think him being at least on the front nine yesterday, the one that felt like he wanted to come out swinging and make a run at it. And then obviously things didn't go his way on the back. You know, he had never had a top 10 in a major until last year at the Open Championship, and now he's strung together back-to-back top 10s in majors. So I think if there's a guy that would have as popular of a major win, it would be Max. So I would say the two guys that were kind of giving Scheffler a bit of a fight yesterday, Åberg and Homa, take a lot out of this. And there are two guys that I think, depending on where you are in golf circles, are guys that people expect to win majors and would really like to see majors because of the impact that it would have, not just here, but around the globe.
Yeah, I was really disappointed in both Morikawa and Homa there on the back nine. I thought they'd
It was crazy. I mean, they all folded, Kevin. Yeah. It was unbelievable. You know, you mentioned earlier, go mow the grass at 14. And I mentioned this to my family we were watching, is that, you know, you start running out of consequential shots on that golf course. And when Scottie stood up over that ball on 13, hanging lie out of the rough, I kind of thought with the lead he might lay up, and instead he just puts it on the green, then you know he's going to two-putt for birdie.
Yeah.
That to me was kind of the last consequential shot that he had. But for all of those guys to have consequential moments and then, you know, Homa blowing it over the green at 12, which happens, I totally get it. Like, it totally happens. But, you know, Åberg and Morikawa to rinse it on 11, like, those were interesting things, because this is the highest compliment I can pay to Scottie Scheffler is it never looks like he's playing A-plus golf, like what Tiger Woods showed us in 2000 or 2005 or even 2013. But he still wins sometimes when that was not his A-plus game yesterday. And even you look at the score and it's like, well, Will, is that hypercritical? And I was like, yeah, but look at how he started. Like, he did not take advantage of scoring opportunities. He was a scrambling fool through the course of the week. Like, there was a little bit of an opening there yesterday if anybody else wanted to have their best moments. And when all of a sudden it was all tied, and I understand it was only tied for a quick second, and then Scottie went on that incredible run, including that shot at 9, which I thought was really the difference in the golf tournament. Like, all those guys had the chance to be perfect on those consequential shots too, and none of them were. And that was really telling yesterday when you're in the pressure cooker of trying to win a major.
Yeah, it's the ultimate compliment in my mind when you can make something look really, really boring. And that's what he did. I go back to the Dan Hurley quote, Will, and Dan Hurley and Scottie Scheffler, the comparison probably stops there for them emotionally. But Dan Hurley says, we make a hard tournament look really easy. I mean, Augusta National had two dudes under 4 under par. It's not like there were a bunch of red numbers up there all week long. And Scottie Scheffler made a really hard golf course and a really hard tournament look easy on the back nine when, you know, everybody, what, four guys were tied for the lead on hole eight or hole nine. So, yeah.
Yeah, it's a really nerdy debate, too, in golf circles about which golf course favored him more. Was he better with his ball striking when it was really hard, or was he better when it was easy? And I know a lot of people that are kind of going back, and it's like, you know what? We don't have to answer that question because he's the best player in the world, and it doesn't matter what the conditions were. He was just better every single day for the most part.
Amen to that. Will, always enjoy our conversations. We got to get out this summer. I've got to hit these new Mizuno irons here coming up shortly, and hopefully we can get out at some point this summer.
We'll make it happen.
Final hour on what is a very busy Monday here from a sports world standpoint. Pacers in the playoffs for the first time in 4 years. Caitlin Clark to the Fever becomes official in less than 12 hours with the WNBA draft starting at 7:30. We've got Colts news items as they're back to work to force Buckner a contract extension. So a lot to get to here with our next guest who I ran into prior to the start of yesterday's Pacers and Hawks game. Bob Kravitz from BobKravitz.com is with us here. Bob, great to see you yesterday. And I guess I teased the question, so I might as well start with it. You'd be the perfect person to ask. Anyway, shape or form, do you see any comparisons to Caitlin Clark coming to Indy as one Peyton Manning back in 98?
Actually, I think it's a bigger deal in terms of star power. I mean, she's already a megastar, Taylor Swift type of megastar. Peyton didn't even win the Heisman, for God's sake. I mean, we all knew that Peyton was going to be good, but I think this is even bigger in terms of the impact that it's going to have on the city, at least initially. The Fever averaged 4,000 some odd fans last year. They're going to start selling out. So I think this could have an even bigger impact.
Bob Kravitz with us. Bob, I would agree with you, and I've said the last, several weeks, month, whatever it is, since we knew the Fever had the number one pick, and Caitlin Clark a couple days after that said, hey, I'm coming out, and, this is my last few games at Iowa. It fundamentally changes the finances of the Fever. How does it change, do you believe, sports coverage in this city, the conversation, and the sports calendar? Usually, it can be a little bit of a dead time now, but that's not going to be the case with her.
Absolutely. Usually during the summers I drive my wife crazy. I walk around in circles and mutter to myself, what in the hell am I going to write today? And there's plenty to write this summer. I'll be honest with you, I have basically ignored the Indiana Fever for the last number of years, at least since their 2012, and then they went to the finals again and lost a couple of years later. I followed them pretty closely during those two runs, but for the most part, I've ignored them. That won't be a problem this year. They'll get plenty of coverage. It's not just Caitlin Clark. They've got a pretty good team. I don't know if they're a playoff team right away, but they're not going to be the garbage team that they've been the last number of years.
Yeah, I was talking to somebody that was affiliated with the Fever, and he was like, I don't think fans realize Aaliyah Boston, like, she, very good chance she has a better WNBA career than Caitlin Clark. Like, I mean, she is a great, great player. They made the comp to me of Tim Duncan from an NBA standpoint, so yeah. Certainly plenty to like with the Fever as this rebuild. It's taken a while, but certainly looks to be on the right path. Again, Bob Kravitz with us here, BobKravitz.com. Bob, I thought it was fitting yesterday. And before I get into Pacers Bucks, just a hat tip to Miles Turner. I mean, like, everything he's been through
for him to have that game in game 82 when you need it the most, I thought it was a pretty cool kind of feel-good moment for a guy that, you know, and I've been one of them, that has certainly dealt with a lot of criticism and I think at times some unfair expectations.
Yeah, look, hey, you're talking to the guy who had him traded about 47 times last year. I thought it was great. I think that he has become kind of, you know, along with Tyrese, the face of the franchise. I mean, he's been here, what, 9 years now? And I feel good for him. You know, not only did they make the playoffs, but I think they made the playoffs with a real chance to make some noise. And we'll get into this as we move on, but I really think the Pacers have a chance to beat Milwaukee. They can beat anybody in the Eastern Conference, not named the Boston Celtics.
Yeah, I want to get to the Bucks here in a second, but I think you're spot on. If nothing else, they can make life really, really difficult for some teams, especially if they advance. Bob Kravitz with us, bobkravitz.com. He joins us on the Payless Liquors Hotline. Bob, I love the matchup. I wanted to see the Bucks more than the Knicks. I thought the Knicks with OG Anunoby, Jalen Brunson is playing at an absolute top level, MVP level right now this season. Plus, I just thought with Tom Thibodeau, defensively minded coach, they could have slowed the Pacers down a little bit. You throw in the drama with Milwaukee, the whiny with Milwaukee. They're not playing their best basketball. Doc Rivers hadn't done too much. Giannis, we can't understate enough how big of a deal his injury. He's going to be, you would imagine, hampered in this series a little. Do you think they win? I happen to think they do win and they do beat Milwaukee. And if so, boy, Milwaukee's going to hate that, and they have a chance to really stick the stake in the heart of the Bucks this season.
Well, I just posted a column about 10 minutes ago. I think that the Pacers are going to win this series in six games. Look, the Bucks are 17-19 since they fired Adrian Griffin and brought in Doc Rivers. You don't know the situation yet with Giannis Antetokounmpo. He may be out for the beginning of the series. It's really up in the air. They're not a real athletic team. They're not a real physical team. They don't run. I think Indiana is a nightmare scenario for the Milwaukee Bucks. Now, they've got a ton of playoff experience, obviously. They've got themselves a championship. But there's something not right with that team. And I think if the Pacers can steal one in Milwaukee and get in their heads a little bit, I'm convinced the Pacers can win this thing in six games.
Yeah, I don't think the Pacers will be some plucky underdog. Agreed. No one's giving them a chance. I think they're going to be a very not just locally. I think nationally already you're seeing them as a very popular pick here in round one. He is Bob Kravitz, bobkravitz.com, where you can find his work, his latest on the Pacers and their season so far as they now transition into the postseason. Let's switch gears a little bit here, Bob. I don't know how familiar our audience is with this, but a week from Saturday's day three of the NFL draft. A lot of people have checked out from the draft by that time. For us, though, it's Jim Irsay. I almost call it like State of the Union time. Right. He frequently visits with the media almost every Saturday of the draft on an annual basis and kind of lay of the land of where they're at offseason-wise heading into that upcoming year. Have you gotten any indication on if we will hear from Irsay, who, of course, did not make an appearance at the league meetings back a few weeks ago?
It's funny you mentioned that because I was going to reach out today to the PR guy extraordinaire, Matt Conte, and find out if he's going to be there. You know, we need proof of existence. I mean, we haven't seen him in Lord knows how long. I'd like to see how he's doing. Ask him how he's doing. Whether he's gonna, you know, remain in charge of this program, which I'm sure he will, this franchise. I'd like to get his thoughts on the fact that Chris Ballard simply is incapable of taking a big swing, which is weird for a Jim Irsay-owned team because he likes the big swings. They spent money, but they spent money on their own. And I would have liked, you know, when you've got a quarterback on a rookie contract and the money has gone up. The cap has gone up by a higher percentage than ever before. You would think they might make a move or two, but not really. Joe Flacco and Raekwon Davis, and that's it.
Does Bob Kravitz, and Bob Kravitz with us, do you have a thought on what they should do at 15? Are you attached to one of these wideouts or corners or pass rushers? Is there anything you're passionate about as they sit there at number 15?
I'm passionate about Brock Bowers, and I think if you can move up a couple of spots to get yourself a Kelce-like potentially a Kelce-like tight end, I think at this point they've got to surround Richardson the way Houston, for example, has surrounded Stroud, the way that Tennessee has surrounded Levis. I think they need themselves. They've got about 12 tight ends. None of them are worth a damn. You know, go get Brock Bowers and take care of that position for the next 10 years.
Bob, I want to go back to the Chris Ballard comments for just a second. You know, when the draft happens here next Thursday, the reaction, I would assume, will be very similar almost to how the reaction right now is in Bloomington with the portal. You know, it's like for I don't know how long the period is, but for a period of time, you know, Mike Woodson and that staff get celebrated. For a period of time post-draft, every staff gets celebrated. Like, oh my gosh, you know, look at this guy they found at 15. This is unbelievable. So given all that, and I'll ask this first from internally in Bloomington and at West 56th Street. Whose seat do you believe is hotter entering this season, Chris Ballard or Mike Woodson?
Chris Ballard. To me, this is it. Now, you know, what Jim Irsay is thinking, I have absolutely no idea because he's been kind of, on the outside looking in the last couple of months, you know, because of his health issues. I think that Ballard, if they don't make the playoffs this year, I don't see how you can justify bringing him back for a ninth year. You know, I mean, it'll be 9 years without winning the AFC South, which is not exactly a daunting proposition. So I think Ballard is on a much, much hotter seat.
And to be clear, that is your opinion, or you believe internally?
No, that's my opinion. Yeah, that's not based on anything. Because, again, and I mentioned this in the column, we don't know where Jim's head is at right now. I mean, we have no idea, and frankly, we never do. But, that's just my thought. I don't see how you can go 8-plus years and never win the division and think that's really working well for you.
Bob Kravitz with us, bobkravitz.com. He joins us, Payless Liquors Hotline. Bob, I remember having you on, probably before even 2024, and you said, and you were very strong, maybe early Big Ten season, that you said, hey, Purdue's going to go win the national title. And by yep. God, Bob, you're right there. I mean, close game, 6-point game at halftime, but they do make the Final Four. We know they ran into that juggernaut that is UConn. I guess now that you've had basically a week to think about it, what stood out, what stands out for you with that run for Purdue right to the final game?
Well, I think it's a confirmation that what they're doing is right. The way that Matt Painter is building this program is a little unusual in this day and age of, you know, mass transfers and NIL. But, you know, and you had a once-in-a-lifetime player. That doesn't hurt either. But, no, I watched that game, and after three possessions, I thought they're screwed. I really did. After three possessions, I mean, UConn was moving the ball. They're getting whatever they wanted. And Purdue had to work so damn hard just to get a decent look. Even Zach Edey, a couple of those jump hooks he made were outside of his comfort zone. I think Purdue's going to be good for a long time. I mean, they got a recruiting class coming in that's top 10, top 15. You got Heidi coming back. You've got a lot of good players coming back. So I think Purdue's They're not going to be a Final Four team every year like UConn, but I think they're still going to be the cream of the crop in the Big Ten.
That's a great point. I mean, yeah, Edie was great early, but man, he had to really work for that early, and you just knew eventually it would catch up to Purdue. Bob, as always, thank you for the time. I definitely want to give you a chance, though, because I saw you announce it, I think it was last week or so, to plug your golf outing coming up here. Always a fun event coming up, I believe, in July, right?
Absolutely. It's July 8th at Prairie View Golf Course, the ALS Golf Classic. If you're interested, I'm going to get the link out here again. I put the link out a couple of days ago, but I will get it out on Twitter and Facebook and Instagram and My Face and all that other stuff that Bill Belichick likes.
My Face, yeah, one of my favorite social mediums out there. Bob, this is a golf nerd question we'll end with. And not to put you on the spot, but I always say this to some of my friends that, you know, play a golf course a lot, and I know you play Prairie View a lot. One hole out there, Bob, that you have to par or you go to jail for the rest of your life. What hole are you picking at Prairie View Golf Course?
The one where I made a hole-in-one. It's an easy par three. What the hell? Let's see. We got...
Six?
No, on the backside. Like... 14, maybe? 15?
Yeah, 15, yeah. 14's a hard hole.
14's the hard one. That's the long par four. Well, it's long for me. Anything over 370 yards is long for me.
Was that a humble brag so you could talk about your hole-in-one? Because if it was, that was outstanding.
Good for you, Bob, yeah.
It really wasn't meant to be, but it just kind of happened organically, and I'm pretty damn proud of that.
Now, is that your only hole-in-one? I have not made one yet in 34 years on this earth.
Are you kidding? As good as you are?
Wow.
And Bob, I'll be honest, I don't know if I've really ever been that close. Did you see it happen? Like, could you see it was the pin, like, in an accessible spot? You could see it go in?
Well, now I'm really going to humble brag. The first one I saw beautifully. It was a little bit downhill, and I saw it go in. The second one,
you've made two.
Humble brag, the guys I was playing with were like, that went in the hole. I'm like, you're full of... You know what?
Yeah.
And we went up there, and by God, the ball was in there, and it cost me about $600 in drinks.
On this absolutely beautiful Monday, great. Ran into Bob, had a nice conversation with him yesterday. I'll be honest, I don't know if I'm going to sleep very well tonight, Bob, knowing you've got two and I've got none.
I know. That's got to be devastating for you.
A nice kick in the you-know-what to start this Monday. Bob's latest, again, up on bobkravitz.com about the Pacers as they encounter a playoff series that Bob has the Pacers winning in six games against the Bucks. Bob, great seeing you yesterday, man. Let's definitely get out on the course this summer.
Let's do it, man. All right, take care, guys.
That is the great Bob Kravitz.
You can get his
right
third
there.
Hole in one, then.
On the Payless Liquors hotline.
What if he did, Mark? What if he did?
I would say I'd walk home, but from Prairie View to my home, that is a long, long walk there.